This audio program is brought to you courtesy of Audible.com. Audible, audio that speaks to you wherever you are.
Mrs. McKinty trial sensation. Murderer to hang. Read all about it.
We present John Moffat as Hercule Poirot, Julia McKenzie as Ariadne Oliver, and George Baker as Superintendent Spence in Agatha Christie's Mrs. McGinty's Dead.
It is one of the great sadnesses of life that one can eat only 3 times a day. But one must never allow overindulgence in breakfast or lunch to detract from dinner. For dinner is the supreme meal of the day and its most sublime moment. I had dined well at the Vieille Grand-Mère, but the rest of the evening yawned emptily ahead of me.
McKinty trial, verdict!
If only my good friend Hastings were here. He never fails to exasperate me, and yet I miss him. I miss his incredulous, wide-eyed wonder, his open-mouthed appreciation of my talents, his stupendous astonishment when he at last perceives the truth that has been clear to me all along.
McKinty trial! Verdict!
Mon cher, cher ami, you never seem to understand that it is my weakness to show off.
McKinty trial sensation! Read all about it!
But he is far away in South America, and there is no one to appreciate my talents. It was too late for the theatres, and there was nothing to tempt me into any of the cinemas. Reluctantly, I made my way home to Whitehaven Mansions.
Monsieur Poirot, I hope you still remember me after all this time.
And to my great joy, there was my old friend and colleague, Superintendent Spence, sitting in an armchair, drinking a foaming tankard of ale poured out for him by the admirable George. The evening was saved.
I'm taking an unpardonable liberty dropping in on you like this.
No, but it is so kind of you to call in on an old acquaintance. I appreciate it more than I can say.
There's rather more to it than that, I'm afraid. And if you send me away with a flea in my ear, I shan't be surprised.
No, there will be no flea. What is it you want to ask me?
It's about the McGinty case. You've read about it, perhaps.
Not with any attention. An old woman murdered for her savings. How did she die?
That takes me back. Funny, I never thought about it until this moment.
I do not follow you.
There was a game we used to play when we were kids. We stood in a row, and there were questions and answers down the line. Mrs. McGinty's dead. How did she die? Down on one knee, just like I. And we'd all go down on one knee. Next question. Mrs. McGinty's dead. How did she die? Holding her hand out, just like I. And we'd all be kneeling down with our right arms held out. Then, Mrs. McGinty's dead. How did she die? Like this. And the boy at the end of the row would deliver a hefty blow and we'd all go down like ninepins. That takes me back, that does.
Yes, but how did she die?
She was hit a savage blow on the back of the head with some sharp, heavy instrument. We never managed to find the actual weapon. Her room had been ransacked and about £30 in cash had been stolen.
She lived alone?
There was a lodger, James Bentley.
Ah, yes, I remember the name.
There were no signs the place had been broken into. Bentley was hard up. He'd lost his job and owed 2 months' rent. The money was found hidden under a pile of stones in the garden at the back of the cottage. His coat sleeve had blood on it, Mrs. McGinty's blood. According to his first statement, he was never near the body. So it couldn't have come there by accident.
And he was arrested and put on trial?
At Kilchester Assizes. The jury took only 20 minutes to reach a verdict of guilty, and he was sentenced to death.
And you immediately got on the train and came straight to see me. Why?
Because I don't think he did it.
And why do you think that?
I can't give you a reason. I dare say the jury thought he looked like a murderer. I didn't.
And you know a great deal about murderers.
He wasn't cocky. And in my experience, they usually are.
What is he like, this James Bentley?
Unprepossessing sort of chap. Can't look you straight in the face. Made a bad impression on the jury.
Did he have a good counsel?
The man he was allotted under the Poor Persons Defence Act put up the best show he could.
So, according to the law of the land, James Bentley has nothing to complain of.
If he's hanged for a murder he didn't commit, he'll have plenty to complain of.
Very just observation. So what do you suggest?
I suspect you've got a pretty good idea of what's coming. The Bentley case is closed, and I'm already investigating an embezzlement. I'm not a free man.
And I am.
You've got it. Awful cheek, I know. But I can't think of any other way.
Do not distress yourself. I have leisure. Too much leisure. And it will be a challenge to the little grey cells. If James Bentley is already condemned, there's no time to lose. When was the murder?
November the 22nd, last year.
So, if Bentley did not kill Mrs. McGinty, who did?
Well, that's the trouble. As far as I can see, there isn't anybody.
Another bottle of beer, perhaps.
I won't say no.
But for every murder, there must be a motive. Did anyone profit by Mrs. McGinty's death?
Well, she did have £200 in the savings bank. Her niece gets it.
Her niece?
A Mrs. Birch. Lives in the same village. Husband's employed in the building trade. She's a pleasant enough woman.
Oh, yes, we knew that Auntie had a little something put by and we'd get it when she died. Not that we needed it, of course. We've got something put by ourselves, but that's not to say it won't come in handy.
Your beer, Superintendent.
Oh, thanks. Cheers.
Yeah. So, tell me about Mrs. McGinty herself.
She was 64, a widow. Husband died 7 years ago. Since then, she's been going out daily, doing cleaning and various domestic chores around the village.
How long had she had a lodger?
Only since her husband's death. Bentley used to live with his mother at Cullen Quay, about 12 miles down the road. When she died, he sold the house and got a job in Kilchester. Breather and Scuttle, rather a second-rate firm of estate agents. When they had to cut down their staff, he was the first to go. He couldn't get another job and his money ran out. He was 2 months behind with his rent, and Mrs. McGinty was beginning to get impatient.
And did he know she had £30 in the house?
Oh, yes. She liked to keep money where she could lay her hands on it at any moment. It was under a loose floorboard in her bedroom. Bentley admitted he knew it was there.
So, tell me about her death.
It was on the night of November the 22nd. The police surgeon put the time of her death between 7 and 10 p.m. Most likely about 8:30.
And where was James Bentley at the time?
He said he was out walking. He did that most evenings after dark.
I came back at about 9 o'clock. I had my own key. I went straight up to my bedroom, and I read for a bit, and went to sleep. I thought something must be wrong when I came down in the morning and found no breakfast ready.
All the windows were closed and shuttered on the inside. There were no signs of any break-in.
So, either Bentley must have killed her, or she admitted her murderer herself while Bentley was out.
Exactly. We've eliminated the neighbours. The niece and her husband were out at the pictures in Kilchester. Everything pointed to Bentley, and there was blood on his sleeve.
How did he account for that?
Said he remembered brushing up against a butcher's stall the previous day. But of course it wasn't animal blood.
So did he continue with his story?
Oh, no. You see, there was hair on the cuff as well. Mrs. McGinty's hair. So he changed his tale.
I went into the parlour when I came back from my walk, and she was lying there on the floor. I knelt down to touch her, just to make sure, and there was blood on the back of her head. I never could bear the sight of blood. I ran back up to my room and thought I was going to faint. I just lay there on my bed all night long. And in the morning, I couldn't bring myself to admit I knew she had been killed, and I hadn't done anything about it.
Not a very convincing story.
And yet, you know, it might have been true. He was frightened that he might be suspected, and so the silly Juggins put himself into it, right up to his neck.
It is possible. So, where am I to stay in this place? What did you say the name was?
Broadhinney.
Is there an inn there of moderate comfort?
There's the Three Ducks, but it doesn't put people up. There's the Lamb at Culhaven, 3 miles away, and then there's a kind of guest house in Broadhinney itself, Long Meadows. It used to be the manor, been in the hands of the Summerhayes family for generations, but they're reduced to taking in paying guests. I don't imagine it's very comfortable.
If I suffer, I suffer.
So what kind of cover story are you going to prepare for yourself? Who are you going to be?
I shall go as myself.
But do you think that's wise?
It is essential. It is time that we are up against. And what do we know? Nothing. So, my best hope is to arrive at Broadhinney pretending that I know a great deal. I am the great, the unique Hercule Poirot, and I am not satisfied with the verdict in the McGinty case, and I have a very shrewd suspicion of what actually happened.
And then?
Then I observe the reactions. And most definitely there will be reactions.
Don't go sticking your neck out. I don't want anything to happen to you.
But if it does, you would be proved right, beyond the shadow of a doubt.
Well, that may be. But I don't want your death on my hands. Just watch your step.
Long Meadows was the closest I hope I will ever come to hell. The carpets were full of holes. There was thick dust on all the shelves. The springs protruded through the sofa. The dog had the mange. And the doors burst open with every gust of cold wind.
Maury! The cat's been sick again! What the devil should I do?
I'm coming, darling! Hold everything!
Maureen Summerhayes had red hair and an attractive, freckled face. But it was clear that nature had not intended her to run a guest house.
Johnny, why the hell did you leave the back door open? The hens have got into the larder and they've woken up the baby.
Oh, sorry, Maureen. The latch is broken. It's time he woke up anyway.
And for this I was paying 7 guineas a week.
Oh, that's where I left the beans. I'd no idea where they got to. Would you mind frightfully, Mr. Would it bother you if I slice them in here? The smell in the kitchen's too frightful.
Oh, madame, I should be enchanted.
I do hope you're not too frightfully uncomfortable here. If there's anything you want altered, don't hesitate to say.
You're too kind, madame. I only wish it were within my powers to provide you with suitable domestics.
Domestics? What a hope! We can't even get hold of a daily. Our only really good one was murdered, would you believe?
Ah, that would be Mrs. McGinty.
Yes, Mrs. McGinty. And I can't tell you how much I miss her. Of course, it was all quite a thrill at the time, first murder we've ever had in Broadhinney. But as I told Johnny, it was a downright bit of bad luck for us. Without Mrs. McGinty, I just can't cope.
She was reliable and honest. You could trust her.
Oh, she'd never pinch anything, if that's what you mean. Of course, she snooped a bit, had a look at one's letters and all that. But one expects that sort of thing.
Maureen, that wretched dog's been at the hen's feed again.
Oh, damn, now he'll be sick as well.
Is this enough spinach, do you think?
Of course not.
Oh, it seems a colossal amount to me.
It'll be about a teaspoonful when it's cooked. Has the fish come?
No sign of it.
Hell! We'll have to open a tin of something. Could you do that, Johnny? One of the ones in the corner cupboard. That one we thought was a bit bulged. I expect it's all right, really.
What the devil's gone into the nut?
Oh, blast! The beans have gone all over the floor. It's not my day.
Let me help you, madame.
Oh, thanks awfully. They do look a bit black, don't they? I'm afraid they won't be very nice.
You permit that I shut the door. There is a decided draught.
That door never stays shut. The house has been falling to pieces for centuries. Johnny's parents could never afford to do anything about it. And when we came back from India to live here, we couldn't do anything about it either. I say, the fish will probably be here in a minute. I wonder if you'd mind forking out for the first week's rent. You are staying a week, aren't you?
Perhaps longer.
Sorry to bother you, but I haven't got any cash in the house.
Oh, pray not. Do not apologise, madame. Here you are.
Thanks a lot, Mr...
My name is Poirot, madame. Hercule Poirot.
What an unusual name.
I am, as you may know, a detective. Perhaps the most famous detective in the world.
I see you're quite a joker, Mr. Poirot. What are you detecting?
I am investigating the murder of Mrs. McGinty.
But that's all over, surely. They arrested the lodger. I expect he's been hanged by now.
He has not been hanged, and the case is far from over.
I must have cut my hand somehow. I'm bleeding all over the beans. Still, it won't matter. They're going into boiling water. Things are always all right when you boil them, aren't they? Even tins.
I think, madame, I shall not be in for lunch.
Oh, really? Nothing seems to be going right today. But you'll be in tonight, won't you? I'm thinking of having a go at rabbit stew.
It was time to set about my investigation. Mrs. Birch, Mrs. McGinty's niece, lived in a council house outside the village. It was neat and clean and smelt refreshingly of furniture polish and brasso.
Very unpleasant it's been having poor auntie murdered and the police tramping round all over the place, ferreting about and asking nasty questions with the neighbours all agog. I didn't think we'd ever live it down. I really did hope it was all over.
And suppose James Bentley is innocent after all?
Of course he's not innocent. He did it all right. I never liked the look of him. He's wandering about and talking to himself. Yeah, but Auntie always insisted he was harmless and obliging and didn't give trouble. She knows better now. Poor soul.
Can you tell me a little about your aunt? What kind of person was she?
We didn't see much of her, really. We used to go over for Sunday dinner once a month, or she'd come here. She always kept her house neat and tidy. And she went out cleaning, of course, round the village. 1 and 10 pence an hour was what she charged, though some of the people round here can afford 10 times that amount.
And did she go out very much? Did she have many friends?
She kept herself to herself. She went to church, but she didn't hold with any of the church activities. She used to go up to the pictures sometimes, but what she really enjoyed was her Sunday paper.
After about an hour, I took my leave. It seemed most unlikely that Mrs. Birch would have struck her aunt down with a meat chopper, or whatever the weapon was. And so I caught the train into Kilchester to call at the offices of Breather and Scuttle, the estate agents where James Bentley had once worked.
Precious little I can tell you about him. Well, nothing against the chap, but he had no idea of salesmanship and therefore perfectly useless in this job. If a client comes to us with a house to sell, we're there to sell it for him. If a property is miles off the beaten track, we stress its charm and antiquity and don't mention the plumbing. And if a house looks straight out at the gasworks, we talk about the amenities and the facilities.
I see that you are a judge of men, Mr. Scuttle.
Not too bad, not too bad.
So tell me, strictly between ourselves, do you think that James Bentley killed the old woman?
Of course he did.
And you think it was a likely thing for him to do, psychologically speaking?
Well, if you put it like that, no, not really. I shouldn't have thought he'd have had the guts. Mind you, he was a bit balmy, always a bit soft in the head, and what with being out of a job and all that, he might just have gone over the edge.
You had no special reason for discharging him?
Bad time of year. We sacked the one who was the least competent. Gave him a good reference and all that. He didn't get another job, though. No pep. Made a bad impression on people.
Excuse me. Do you mind if I sit down and talk to you for a moment?
I would be delighted, mademoiselle.
You see, I couldn't help hearing what you were saying to Mr. Scuttle.
Ah, now, you were sitting at the typewriter to the right of the back window.
Mm. Is Mr. Bentley going to appeal? You see, I really couldn't believe he did it. I thought it must be a mistake, but then the evidence...
Yes, mademoiselle?
There simply didn't seem to be anyone else who could have done it. I thought perhaps he might have gone off his head.
Did he ever show signs of being...
Oh, no! He was just rather shy and a bit awkward. He didn't make the best of himself.
You liked him?
Yes, I did. He was gentle and polite. And he knew a lot, really. Things out of books, I mean.
Ah, yes. Things out of books.
He missed his mother terribly. She'd been ill for years, apparently, and he'd done everything for her.
You and he were friends?
I wouldn't say that. We used to talk sometimes, but after he left, I didn't see much of him. I wrote to him once, but I didn't get an answer.
But you liked him?
Yes, I did.
What is your name, mademoiselle?
Maud Williams. Is there anything I can do to help?
Yes, I think there is. There are those who believe, Miss Williams, that James Bentley is innocent. I am the person charged with the investigation, and I may tell you that I have already made considerable progress. Oh. Now tell me, did he ever mention anyone with whom he, or perhaps his mother, were on bad terms?
No, never. His mother didn't like young women much, I gather.
Mothers of devoted sons rarely do. No, I mean more than that. Some family feud, some enmity, someone with a grudge.
No, he never mentioned anything of that kind.
Did he ever speak of Mrs. McGinty?
He used to complain she gave him kippers much too often. And once he said she was upset because her cat had died.
Did he ever... And you must be honest with me, please.
Mm-hmm.
Did he ever mention that he knew where she kept her money?
Actually, he did. We were talking about people being distrustful of banks, and he told me she used to keep her spare money under a floorboard. He said I could help myself any day when she's out. Not quite as a joke. He didn't joke much.
Ah, that is good. When James Bentley speaks of stealing, he thinks of it as something that is done behind someone's back. He might have said, someday someone will hit her over the head for it.
Better be getting back. We're only supposed to take half an hour. It's a one-horse place, Kilchester. I've always had jobs in London before. Oh, you'll let me know if there's anything I can do, won't you?
Yes.
Oh, and could you possibly let me have your phone number?
So, at least there was one person who believed that James Bentley was innocent. I caught the train back to Broadhinny and went to inspect the scene of the crime. But the house Mrs. McGinty had kept so spotlessly clean was now dirty and uncared for. I called in at the house next door and at the other old cottages, but I could discover nothing that Superintendent Spence had not found. By then, my shoes were becoming uncomfortably tight, but I thought I should at least call in at the post office.
That'll be 4 and 10 pence altogether. Mm-hmm. Will there be anything more, sir?
No, thank you. Now, I am by way of being a stranger in these parts.
So I believe, sir. Come down from London, haven't you?
I expect you know my business here as well as I do, madame.
Oh, no, sir. I've really no idea.
Mrs. McGinty.
Ah, that was a sad business. Shocking business.
I expect you knew her well.
I certainly did. She'd always pass the time of day when she came in here for any little thing. Oh, yes. Terrible tragedy. And not settled yet, or so I've heard people say.
There is a doubt in some quarters as to James Bentley's guilt.
Well, wouldn't be the first time the police got hold of the wrong man. Though I wouldn't have thought they had in this case. Even so, did come as a bit of a surprise. A shy, awkward sort of fella, but you wouldn't think of him as dangerous. Mind you never know, do you?
You think he was the only person who could have done it?
We do get some nasty tramps round here sometimes, and I suppose one of them might have found a window unfastened. But he wouldn't go leaving the money behind him, would he?
Mrs. McGinty never spoke of being nervous or afraid of anyone.
Not to me, she didn't. And she wasn't the nervous type. She'd stay late sometimes at Mrs. Carpenter's. That's Home Lee, on top of the hill.
Mm-hmm.
They often have people to dinner, and Mrs. McGinty would go there to do the washing up, and then she'd come back in the dark. That's more than I care to do. Very dark it is coming down that hill.
When did you see Mrs. McGinty last?
Must have been on the Monday. She came in to buy a bottle of ink.
She wanted a bottle of ink?
I expect she wanted to write a letter.
That seems indicated. And she was quite her normal self? She did not seem different in any way?
It's funny you should say that. She looked as if she was pleased about something, almost excited. There was quite a sparkle in her eye.
3 days before her death, Mrs. McGinty had bought a bottle of ink. Writing a letter was such an uncommon experience to her that she had to go out to buy a bottle of ink. But to whom had she written?
I can't think of anybody. And she wasn't much of a one for writing letters. There were cards at Christmas, of course, and I suppose she might have written to her sister-in-law once upon a time, but she died 2 years ago.
Can you remember whether there were any letters among her personal possessions?
I don't remember any, but I packed up all her things in a suitcase. I didn't know what to do with them.
I wonder if I might take a look at the contents of that suitcase.
It's upstairs. I'll get it down for you if you like, but I don't think you'll find anything. And the police went through it all.
A brush and comb, a dented silver-backed mirror, a china dog, a Bible, and a pair of shoes wrapped in newspaper. The Sunday Comet for the 19th of November. And on the following day, Mrs. McGinty went out to buy herself a bottle of ink. Women victims of bygone tragedies. And some very blurred reproductions of old photographs. Eva Kane, the other woman in the Craig murder case. Janice Courtland, whose sadistic husband met a violent end. Lily Gambol, tragic child killer. Vera Blake, unsuspecting wife of a murderer. Where are these women now?
And you think this may have had something to do with Mrs. McGinty's murder?
It is possible, is it not? She reads the paper, she buys the bottle of ink, and 3 days later she is brutally murdered.
So what are you suggesting? That she recognized one of these women's photographs and that woman killed her?
That is exactly what I am suggesting.
But if that's the case, that woman is probably still living in Broadhinny and would do anything to prevent anyone else recognizing her. I'll come down straight away. Women victims of bygone tragedies. What's the first name on your list?
Eva Kane. She had a passionate affair with the town clerk of Palminster, Alfred Craig, supposedly devoted to his wife and child.
Another nondescript little man, I seem to recall. Married to an exceedingly tiresome wife.
And Eva Kane was the young nursery governess. A pretty, trusting young girl, according to the Sunday Comet, seduced in her fragile youth by a cold-blooded murderer.
The wife suffered from various minor ailments, most of them probably imaginary. Craig told everyone she'd been ordered abroad for her health, and he'd taken her to the south of France.
And then returned home to lead a life of shameless sin with Eva Kane.
A few months later, he told everyone his wife had died abroad. Unfortunately for him, he also told one of her friends the name of the place where she'd died. Somebody checked up on his story, and there was no record of her death.
The police found her body in the cellar.
Poisoned with some kind of vegetable alkaloid.
And the unfortunate Miss Kane was charged as an accessory.
But before he was hanged, Craig made a full confession, which put her in the clear. Just as well, since the poor girl was pregnant.
According to the Sunday Comet, kindly relations in the Dominions offered her a home. Changing her name, the pitiful young girl left these shores to begin a new life.
So who's the next tragic victim?
Janice Courtland, married to a man who was given to peculiar practices. But after 8 years of martyrdom, it says, she made friends with a young man
who walked in on some particularly nasty scene and knocked the husband into the fireplace. He broke his skull on the mantelpiece. He got off with 5 years for manslaughter.
And she, like Eva Kane, went abroad to forget. The next case is that of Lily Gambol, the tragic victim of an overcrowded age. Do you remember the case?
Oh, I remember her all right. And she wasn't much of a tragic victim. There was no room for her at home, so she went to live with her aunt. Auntie wouldn't let her go to the pictures, so Lily sloshed her with a meat chopper. She was only 12, so she was sent to an approved school.
By now, she is a free woman, free again to take her place in society. Her conduct during her years of confinement was exemplary. Does this not show it was not the child but the system that we must blame?
I doubt whether poor old auntie would have agreed with that. Any more?
There is one more. Vera Blake.
Doesn't ring a bell. Remind me.
She does not seem to have had much luck with her husbands. Her first was a gangster who killed a night watchman, and her second was a receiver of stolen goods. But then a knight in shining armor appeared and took her and her children off to a new life in the new world.
Probably turned out to be another confidence trickster. So what's your theory? You think that Mrs. McGinty recognized one of these women living in Broadhinny?
Yes, and she wrote to the Sunday Comet.
Well, she'd have had her work cut out to identify anyone from these photographs.
But you could perhaps find better pictures of these women.
Well, I'll do my best. Did the Sunday Comet come up with anything?
They are sending me the original photographs. And I spoke to the woman who wrote the article, a Miss Horsfall. She remembered the letter from Mrs. McGinty. She said she knew where there was a picture of one of the women and wanted to know how much they would pay her for the information.
So what did they say?
In the words of Miss Horsfall, they told her there was nothing doing. And since Mrs. McGinty's handwriting was so bad, they sent their letter to Broadway rather than Broadhinny.
So that was the end of that. But I'd better be getting back to my case of embezzlement. What's your next step?
So far, I have confined my investigation to the circumstances of the murder. Now it is time to broaden my inquiry. I shall begin, I think, with the local doctor, a man called Rendell.
Monsieur Hercule Poirot, our quiet little village is honoured. What can I do for you? I'm devoured with curiosity to know what you're doing down here. Have we a crime in our midst?
In the past tense, not the present.
Past? I don't remember...
Mrs. McGinty.
Of course. How quickly one forgets. But that's all over and done with, surely.
If I mention this to you in confidence, I am employed by the defence to examine fresh evidence on which to lodge an appeal.
But what fresh evidence can there be?
That, alas, I am not at liberty to divulge.
Oh, of course. Please forgive me.
I came to you because I understand that Mrs. McGinty was occasionally employed here.
Yes, yes, she was. Would you care for a drink, Monsieur Poirot? Sherry? Whiskey?
Sherry, if you please.
Excellent. She used to come in once or twice a week to do the cleaning, the work that our housekeeper can't do any longer. Getting down on her knees, that sort of thing. She was an excellent worker, Mrs. McGinty.
Tell me, Doctor, was Mrs. McGinty a truthful person?
Truthful? What an odd question. I don't think I ever had the opportunity of knowing.
If she made a statement to anyone, do you think that statement would probably be true?
I have no idea. I could ask the housekeeper.
No. It would be better not to do that. Thank you, Doctor.
You're arousing my curiosity. What was she going around saying?
You must understand this is very hush-hush at the moment. I am only at the beginning of my investigation.
Well, you'll have to hurry up if you're going to save Bentley from the gallows. We were all quite sure he'd done it. There didn't seem any room for doubt.
Just an ordinary crime, would you say?
Yes. That just about sums it up.
You knew James Bentley?
He came to see me professionally once or twice. Mostly imaginary ailments, coddled by his mother, I fancy. Though he's not the only case of that here.
Is that so?
Oh, yes. Mrs. Upwood positively dotes upon that son of hers. He's a clever fellow, of course. But not as clever as he thinks. Bit of a budding playwright, is young Robin.
They have been here long?
3 or 4 years. Nobody has been in Broadhinny very long. The original village was only a handful of cottages grouped around long meadows. You're staying there, I understand.
I am.
They've neither of them got the foggiest notion of how to run a guest house. She used to live in India with servants running around all over the place. And he'll never make anything of the market garden business he's trying to set up. Maureen's a charming creature, but he's rather inclined to be moody and has the devil of a temper. He gets it from his father. Old General Summerhayes was a regular Tartar.
Perhaps it would have been better if the Major had stayed in the army. But I must not keep you from your patients, Doctor.
Oh, there's still a few minutes before surgery starts. Oh. And it's so fascinating to have the chance of talking to a real professional. My wife and I are terribly crime-minded.
Do you read criminology, detective stories, or the Sunday papers?
All three.
Do you descend as low as the Sunday Comet?
Oh, what would the weekend be without it?
There was a curious article some time ago about women who had been involved in murder cases and how their lives had been ruined.
Yes, I remember it. Women victims of bygone tragedies. A lot of rubbish, really.
You think so? Where are these women now, the article wanted to know.
I bet they all kept their past pretty dark. Not that you'd recognize any of them from those photographs.
Well, I must not detain you any longer, Doctor. You have been very kind.
Not much help, I'm afraid. Oh, but you must meet my wife. She was immensely interested to hear you were down here. Sheila? Sheila? Come down here. There's somebody you simply must meet.
But Mrs. Rendell gave me the impression that I was the last person on earth she would have wished to meet. Her pale blue eyes stared at me apprehensively. She stammered a few words and took the first opportunity to run off back upstairs.
She'd never have forgiven me if she'd missed you. It has been a great pleasure, Monsieur Poirot. Do feel free to drop in whenever you wish.
And so I made my way to the next house on my list. Hunter's Close, the home of the Weatherbys, was a solid, if neglected-looking, Victorian mansion.
I'm sorry to have taken so long to answer the door. Goodness only knows where the girl's got to. Please come in.
Thank you, mademoiselle. You are Miss Weatherby?
My name is Deirdre Henderson. Mr. Weatherby is my stepfather.
I am making inquiries about Mrs. McGinty. I believe she used to work here.
But she's dead.
I know that.
Is it about insurance or something?
Oh, no. It is not about the insurance. It is a question of fresh evidence. My name is Hercule Poirot, and I am engaged by the defence to make inquiries on behalf of James Bentley.
Oh, you mean it might have been someone else who killed her?
It may well have been. But at the moment I am trying to find out more about Mrs. McGinty herself.
What do you want to know?
Well, to begin with, what did you yourself think of her?
Oh, I don't know. Nothing in particular.
Was she silent or talkative? Curious or did she keep things to herself? A nice woman or not a very nice woman?
She certainly talked a lot. I didn't really like her very much. Perhaps you ought to come see my mother. She's upstairs in her room.
Mrs. Weatherby was a small woman, lying on a sofa in a large, airless room crowded with knick-knacks and Middle Eastern souvenirs. She had a box of chocolates by her side and a glass of orange juice.
You must forgive my not getting up, Monsieur Poirot, but Dr. Rendell does insist on my taking a rest during the day, and everyone scolds me if I don't do what I'm told.
He wants to know about Mrs. McGinty, Mother.
Mrs. McGinty? Who was Mrs. McGinty?
She used to work for us, Mother. You know, the one who was murdered.
Oh, don't, darling. It was all so horrid. I couldn't sleep for weeks afterwards. So stupid to keep our money under the floor. But do please sit down, Monsieur Poirot. Deirdre, move the photo album and the Indian spice box and the little pincushion, dear.
Very well, Mother.
So that Monsieur Poirot has somewhere to sit.
Thank you, madame.
I'm devoured with curiosity. Dr. Rendell rang and told me we had a celebrated criminologist in our midst.
I understand that Mrs. McGinty came to you every Wednesday, and it was on a Wednesday that she died. So had she been here on that day?
I suppose so. Well, it's all so long ago.
Did she say anything to you on that day? Anything special?
Oh, that class of person always talks a lot. One doesn't really listen. And anyway, she couldn't tell she was going to be killed and robbed that night, could she?
There is cause and effect.
I don't see what you mean.
Perhaps I do not see myself. Not yet. One works through darkness towards light. Do you take in the Sunday papers, Mrs. Weatherby?
Of course. The Sunday Times and the Observer.
Mrs. McGinty read the Sunday Comet.
I'm not at all surprised. She would. It's all very upsetting. That horrible lodger of hers. Apparently he was quite an educated man, too. That makes it worse, doesn't it?
Does it?
Oh, yes. Such a brutal crime. A meat chopper. Disgusting.
The police never found the weapon.
They dragged the ponds. I saw them.
Oh, don't be morbid, darling. You know I hate thinking of things like that.
Did Mrs. McGinty...
No, no more questions, please. It's bad for her. She can't even read detective stories.
Oh, my apologies. I have only one excuse. A man is to be hanged in 3 weeks' time. If he did not do it...
But of course he did it. Of course he did.
I am not so sure. But thank you for answering my questions, madam.
What do you mean you're not sure?
I meant what I said, mademoiselle.
You've upset my mother. She hates things like robbery and murders and violence.
It must have come as a great shock to her when a woman who actually worked for her here was killed.
Oh, yes, it was. She couldn't bear to hear anything about it. And to make matters worse, we haven't been able to find anyone to take her place. Mrs. McGinty may have talked a lot, but she was a splendid worker. The girl we've got now is absolutely useless. But, of course, nothing is like what it used to be.
And do you mind that so much, mademoiselle?
I don't know. But it's different for my mother. She lives in the past a lot. She keeps all sorts of things to remind her. Old magazines, dozens of letters, old photographs. I can't understand it myself. I never keep anything.
You look forwards, not back.
I don't know that I look anywhere. I mean, today is usually enough, isn't it?
The door opened, and a tall, pale, elderly man with a thin face and mean, pale little eyes came into the hall.
My stepfather, Mr. Weatherby. This is Monsieur Poirot.
Mr. Weatherby was clearly not impressed. He looked at me coldly and passed on. His only concern was that his luncheon was going to be late. There was an icy dislike in the look he gave his stepdaughter, and something like hatred in the eyes that stared back at him. I returned to Long Meadows for luncheon. Oh, it was a terrible mistake. Under-stewed oxtail, watery potatoes, and what Mrs. Summerhayes optimistically hoped might turn out to be pancakes. They were a lamentable failure. I left as quickly as I decently could and made my way up the hill towards Laburnum's, the home of the wealthy Mrs. Upward and of her son, the promising playwright Robin Upward. And then something suddenly struck me on the back of the head. It was an apple core, and a curiously familiar face, crowned with untidy billows of grey hair, looked at me out of the car window.
I'm so sorry. Did I hit you?
Oh, most certainly. But, oh, surely, it is Mrs. Oliver, is it not?
Oh, Monsieur Poirot! What a splendid surprise. Is this Laburnum's?
I believe so, madame.
Then do you think you could help me out? I'm rather stiff after the long drive.
Of course, madame.
Oh, thank you. Oh, Lord, there goes my bag of apples.
I fear they have fallen in the mud.
Oh, well, never mind. I'm sure there will be plenty of apples down here. But what are you doing in Broad Hinney? After a murder, I suppose.
Your supposition is quite correct, madame.
I hope it's not my hostess, Mrs. Upward.
No, it is not Mrs. Upward. I am about to call on her.
Actually, it's her son I've come down here to see, Robin. He's supposed to be dramatizing a book of mine.
Oh, my felicitations, madame.
Everyone tells me he's very clever. If he's so clever, I don't see why he doesn't write a play of his own and leave my poor Finn alone.
Your Finn? Ah, yes, your detective, Sven Hjersen.
He's not even a Finn anymore. He's become a member of the Norwegian resistance movement. But tell me about your murder or whatever it is.
No, it is not a very picturesque story. an old charwoman who was murdered and robbed 5 months ago, Mrs. McGinty. A young man was convicted and sentenced to death.
And he didn't do it, but you know who did, and you're going to prove it.
No, you go too fast. I do not yet know who did it. And there is very little time for me to find out if I am to save this young man from the gallows.
Men are so slow. I'll soon tell you who did it. A woman's intuition, that's what you need.
Hello? Oh. Abney, is that you?
Here I am, Robin. Don't worry, I'll be very discreet.
No, madame, I do not wish you to be discreet. I want everyone to know who I am.
Ariadne, my precious. How clever of you to find your way here. I can't tell you how happy I am to see you. I've had the most marvellous idea for the second act.
Have you? Robin, this is Hercule Poirot.
Splendid. Come on in and have a drink, both of you, and meet the madre.
Laura Upward was sitting in a wheeled chair by the fireplace, a vigorous-looking woman with iron-grey hair, a determined chin, and lively, intelligent eyes.
It's such a pleasure to meet you, Mrs. Oliver. I expect you hate people talking about your books, but they've been an enormous solace to me for years, and especially since I've been a cripple.
That's very nice of you. May I introduce Hercule Poirot, an old friend of mine? We met by chance just outside your house. Actually, I hit him with an apple core, rather like William Tell, only the other way round.
How do you do, Monsieur Poirot?
Madame.
Robin, get some drinks, will you?
Of course, Madame.
Are you a writer too, Monsieur Poirot?
Oh, no, he's a detective, the Sherlock Holmes kind, and he's come here to solve a murder.
So, Maureen Summerhayes was right. She told me some long rigmarole about having a detective staying in the house. She seemed to think it was frightfully funny, but it's quite serious, is it?
Of course it's serious. You've got a murderer in your midst.
But who's been murdered? Or is it somebody that's been dug up and it's all frightfully hush-hush?
Oh, no, it is not in the least hush-hush.
Some charlady who was murdered last autumn.
But that's all over. I thought it was something new.
Oh, it's not over at all. They arrested the wrong man and he'll be hanged if Monsieur Poirot doesn't find the real murderer in time.
Is this really true? Or is it a joke?
No, it is not a joke, madame.
White lady for you, Madre.
Oh, thank you, dear boy.
And a glass of sherry for you, Ariadne, darling. Is sherry all right for you, Monsieur Poirot?
Thank you, Mr. Upward.
Well, here's to crime.
Oh, to crime.
She used to work here, you know.
Mrs. McGinty?
Yes, didn't she, Madre?
Well, she came one day a week.
What was she like?
Terribly respectable and maddeningly tidy. She had a ghastly way of clearing up everything and putting things into drawers.
Which is just as well. If somebody didn't clear things away at least once a week, we shouldn't be able to move.
I know, Madre, I know. But as I've explained 1,000 times, unless things are left where I put them, I simply can't work at all. My notes get all disarranged.
It's so annoying to be as helpless as I am. I long to be able to do things for myself.
What is it? Arthritis?
Some form of it. I shall have to have a permanent nurse companion soon, I'm afraid. And I hate having to depend on people.
Well, now, darling, don't get yourself all worked up.
Robin's as good as a daughter to me, Mrs. Oliver.
Oh, yes, I'm sure.
He does everything and thinks of everything. No one could be more considerate.
Madre.
After a little while, I made my excuses and left. My last call of the day was at the house of Mr. and Mrs. Carpenter. It was evident that a good deal of money had been spent on it, for Mr. Carpenter was extremely rich and had hopes of becoming the local Member of Parliament.
Mr. and Mrs. Carpenter are not at home, sir.
Evidently, he suspected that I was hoping to sell them something. And so I made my way round to the garden, where I encountered a tall young woman in a mink coat, with platinum blonde hair and eyes the colour of cornflower blue.
What the hell do you want?
I was hoping to see Mr. or Mrs. Carpenter. Have I the pleasure of addressing Mrs. Carpenter?
I am Mrs. Carpenter.
Ah, my name is Hercule Poirot.
Yes?
I wish to ask you a few questions concerning a domestic matter.
We've got a Hoover, thank you.
Oh, no, madame, you misunderstand me.
Oh, you mean one of those stupid household questionnaires?
No, madame. The questions I have to ask you relate to a Mrs. McGinty who died, who was killed last November.
Mrs. McGinty? I don't know who you mean.
You do not remember her murder? Or is murder so common in Brittany that you did not even notice it?
Oh, the murder. Yes, of course. I'd quite forgotten what the old lady's name was.
Although she worked for you in this house?
She didn't. I wasn't living here then. Mr. Carpenter and I were only married 3 months ago.
But she did work for you. On Friday mornings, I think it was. You were then Mrs. Selkirk and living at Horace Cottage.
If you know the answers to everything, I don't see why you need to ask questions. Anyway, what is this all about?
I am conducting an investigation into the circumstances of Mrs. McGinty's murder.
Why? What on earth for? And why have you come to us?
You might know something that might help me.
I don't know anything at all. Why should I? She was only a stupid old charwoman who somebody robbed and murdered. It was quite beastly, like the things you read about in the Sunday papers.
Ah, yes. Like the stories in the Sunday Comet. Do you read the Sunday Comet, madame?
I can't stand any more of this. Guy! Guy, help me, for goodness sake! Guy!
But she could not manage to find her way through the French windows back into the house. I was reminded of a beautiful moth battering itself vainly against a pane of glass.
What on earth's the matter, darling?
This man here, he's a foreigner. He's just walked in here and started asking me all sorts of horrid questions about that murder last year. The old charwoman, you know I hate things like that.
What do you mean by barging onto our property and annoying my wife?
Well, the last thing I should wish is to annoy so charming a lady. I hoped only that since the deceased woman used to work for your wife, she might be able to assist me in my investigation.
What investigation? The case is over and done with, surely.
Oh, no. There you are in error, Mr. Carpenter. It is far from over and done with.
But you're nothing to do with the police, are you?
No, that is correct. I am working independently of the police.
He's something to do with the press. He mentioned the Sunday Comet.
The Sunday Comet? I don't often get around to reading that, I'm afraid. Please understand that my wife is very sensitive. I'm sure it can't be necessary for you to question her about this. After all, she hardly knew the woman.
She was only a stupid old charwoman. I told him so. And she was a frightful liar, too.
Ah, now that is most interesting. So, Mrs. McGinty told lies. That may give me a very valuable lead.
Well, I don't see how.
What lies did she tell, madame?
Stupid things about people. Things that couldn't possibly be true.
I see. She had a dangerous tongue.
No. I didn't mean as much as that. She wasn't in the least bit dangerous. She was just a silly gossip, that's all.
Just a gossip. Well, I regret if I have caused Madame any pain. These affairs are always rather unpleasant.
The whole business was most distressing. Naturally, my wife doesn't like to be reminded of it. I'm sorry we can't help you with any more information, Mr...
My name is Hercule Poirot.
Oh, yes. Well, goodbye, Mr. Poirot.
As I walked down the long drive, I could not forget the image of Mrs. Carpenter trying to find her way through the French windows. She must have been severely short-sighted, but too vain to wear spectacles. And then I remembered the photograph in the Sunday Comet of the schoolgirl with thick, ugly lenses in her glasses. Was it possible that Mrs. Carpenter, with her platinum hair and cornflower blue eyes, was the child who had savagely murdered her aunt? Could she be Lily Gamble?
I've managed to get hold of a few more photographs, but they're not much of an improvement. The hairstyles don't help. Just look at Vera Blake.
I think we can probably eliminate Vera Blake.
You're probably right. If she'd come back from abroad, everybody in Broadhinny would soon have heard about it. Telling the sad story of her life seems to have been her speciality.
Do you have any more information about the others?
Eva Kane. I found the name she took when she left the country after Craig was sentenced to death. It was Hope. Symbolic, do you think?
Perhaps she liked poetry. Beautiful Evelyn Hope is dead. Was her name Evelyn, in fact?
It was, but nobody seems to have called her anything but Eva. The Sunday Comet made her out to be a wide-eyed innocent who never suspected that Craig had murdered his wife. But I've been going through the file, and police opinion was very different. Inspector Trail, he was my old chief when I joined the force. thought that putting Mrs. Craig out of the way was her idea. She might even have done it.
She murdered Mrs. Craig? What made him think that?
Trail reckoned that Craig came home from work one day and found that pretty little Miss Kane had taken a shortcut. I dare say she thought it might be passed off as accidental death. But Craig got the wind up, buried the body in the cellar, and told everyone his wife had gone abroad for her health. Of course, when it all came out, he swore blind the girl had nothing to do with it. And she was a very clever little actress.
And she was carrying Craig's child?
That's right.
So, she was not a tragic victim, but a murderess. And if the incentive was strong enough, she might kill again. And what about the child, Lily Gamble?
She was too young to be charged with murder. They packed her off to an approved school where she did quite well for herself. Last heard of, somewhere in Ireland. I'd have thought we could rule her out.
I think not. You have forgotten the weapon with which Mrs. McGinty was killed, my friend.
But we never found it. I told you, surely.
But it was something like a meat chopper. And that was the weapon with which Lily Gamble struck down her aunt.
Oh, I see what you mean. So tell me, what are the possibilities of any of these women living in Broadhinny?
And if Eva Kane is still alive, she would be about 60, and her daughter...
How do we know it was a daughter?
The Sunday Comet said so. Her daughter would be about 30.
So how does that square with the women Mrs. McGinty worked for?
As far as age goes, Mrs. Weatherby would be about right for Eva Kane, and her daughter, by a previous marriage to a Mr. Henderson, would also be the right age. And I will tell you this. Mrs. Weatherby has been most decidedly a pretty woman. She seems much too frightened and helpless to commit a murder, but...
But that's what they said about Eva Kane. Any other possibilities?
Mrs. Upward is the right age, but she suffers from arthritis and spends most of her time in a wheeled chair.
In a book, of course, she would almost certainly turn out to be the murderer.
Oh, yes.
And the wheeled chair business would be a phony. But I agree, she's pretty unlikely. Any candidates for Lily Gamble?
Well, there are three women in their early 30s. Deirdre Henderson, Sheila Rendell, the doctor's wife, and Mrs. Carpenter. And I will tell you this, my friend. Mrs. Carpenter is afraid of something. I went to see her yesterday, and I happened to mention the Sunday Comet. Instantly, she ran back to the house to call her husband, but she could not find her way through the French windows. She reminded me of a lovely fluttering moth, unable to see where she was going with those beautiful blue eyes of hers.
A proper romantic, that's what you are, Poirot. Beautiful blue eyes, indeed.
No. I do not allow myself to be deceived by sentiment like my good friend Hastings. Let me tell you this. If a woman's claim to beauty depends on the loveliness of her eyes, no matter how short-sighted she is, she will not wear glasses. Now look at the photograph of Lily Gamble. Look at those thick, ugly spectacles.
So you think Mrs. Carpenter may be Lily Gamble?
I only suggest it as a possibility. At the time of Mrs. McGinty's death, Mrs. Carpenter was Mrs. Selkirk, a war widow, very badly off. She would have done anything to suppress the evidence of her past in order to marry the wealthy Mr. Carpenter.
It's possible, I suppose, but it's all just conjecture.
I agree, my friend, and the field is still wide open. Suppose that it is Mrs. Upward who is Eva Kane. She is stricken with arthritis, but she has the determination and willpower to overcome her disability. And she dotes upon her son. She might kill to prevent him finding out the truth.
I thought Eva Kane was supposed to have had a daughter. And in any case, would the truth upset Robin Upward very much?
Probably not. He might even capitalize on it. Famous playwright, the son of a notorious murderer. Ah, but there are so many possibilities.
So many possibilities, Monsieur Poirot, and so little time. Every minute we spend chewing over who might be who is 1 minute nearer the gallows for James Bentley.
I waited at the station at Kilchester for the train to take me back to Broadhinny. It was market day, and the platform was very crowded. And then someone pushed me violently in the small of the back, and if the man beside me had not caught hold of me, I would assuredly have fallen in front of the incoming train.
Are you all right?
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I am most grateful.
What happened? Did you have a dizzy spell?
Spence?
Listen, my friend, I have news for you. Splendid news. Somebody has tried to kill me.
Kill you? How do you mean?
At the station, as the train was coming into the platform, somebody tried to push me in front of it.
I thought something like this might happen. Are you all right?
Perfectly all right, but it was a very near thing.
Did you see who did it?
No, I have no idea who it was, but be assured, my friend, I shall find out. It can only be somebody I interviewed in Brotini. So, now we know we are on the right track.
What we need, Ariadne, is to get more sex into it.
I beg your pardon.
It needs pepping up a bit. You see, after Sven's parachuted down...
But he's 60!
Well, he can't be. I don't see him like that at all. Late 30s at the very most.
But I've been writing books about Sven Hjersson for 30 years, and he was 35 when I started.
If he's 60, we can't possibly develop the sexual antagonism between him and Ingrid. It would just make him a dirty old man.
Yes, well, Sven Hjersson never cared for women much anyway.
But we can't let him be a pansy, darling. It's not that kind of play. It's mystery and excitement and good, clean, open-air fun.
I think I could do with a bit of open air myself. I'm going out for a walk.
Shall I come with you, darling?
No. I'll be perfectly all right on my own, thanks.
In that case, I'll go and whip up an eggnog for Madre. The poor darling's feeling a teeny-weeny bit left out of things. She does like a bit of attention, you know. Oh, and while you're out, think about that scene in the cellar. It needs to have a bit more of a frisson, don't you agree? But the whole thing is really going to be tremendously exciting, so long as you feel happy about it, darling. It's all that matters.
£3 of apples. A bit over three, is that all right?
Perfectly all right.
Oh, thank you very much. And fourpence change. You'll be the lady from London who writes the detective stories.
That's right.
We got three of them on the stand there. Very popular they are.
The affair of the seven goldfish, well, that wasn't at all bad. The cat it was that died. I came rather a cropper over that one. I made a terrible howler about a blowpipe. A man wrote from a museum to correct me.
Oh, I reckon some people only read books hoping to find mistakes in them.
You had a murder of your own down here, didn't you?
Yes, last November. Almost next door, you might say. You're staying at the Burnhams, aren't you?
Yes, with Mrs. Upwood. Must be a terrible trial for the poor soul, confined to that invalid chair all the time.
Oh, she can get about when she wants to, so I've heard. She likes to make people put themselves out for her, particularly that son of hers. Oh, good morning, Miss Anderson.
Morning.
Warm for the time of year, isn't it?
Yes, it is, rather.
Means the fruit blossom will get nipped later. What can I do for you?
I'd like a 5-shilling book of stamps, please.
Yes, certainly. How's Mrs. Weatherby keeping?
Pretty well, thank you. She hasn't been out much, though.
Well, there's a good picture on in Kilchester this week. You ought to go.
I did think of going last night, but Mother didn't want to be left on her own.
It's Betty Grable next week. I'm out of 5-shilling books. Will 2 half-crown ones do?
Oh, yes, yes, that's perfectly right. Thank you. I'd better be off. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, I'd better be on my way, too. Thank you very much, Mrs. Sweetman.
A pleasure, ma'am.
I say, I wonder if you can help me.
Yes?
I want to get back to Le Burnham's, and I've rather lost my bearings.
Well, it's quite easy, really. Take the next road to your right and follow it up the hill.
Oh, of course. So stupid of me.
You're Ariadne Oliver, aren't you?
Yes, that's right.
Robin told us you were coming. I must tell you, I really do enjoy your books.
Oh, thank you. I'm really very glad.
I haven't read as many as I'd like because we only get our books sent from the Times Book Club and Mother doesn't like detective stories. She's a bit of an invalid and frightfully sensitive and they keep her awake at nights, but I like a good murder.
Mrs. Sweetman was telling me about the murder you had down here last year. Which house was it? One of those cottages?
Yeah, that one. That one there.
It doesn't look like a house where there's been a murder, does it?
I suppose not.
It was an old charwoman, wasn't it? Somebody robbed her of her savings.
She had some money under the floor. They said her lodger had done it, James Bentley, but now there seems to be some doubt about it. There's a funny little man down here. French, I think he is.
Belgian, actually. Hercule Poirot. I know all about him.
Is he really a detective?
Oh, yes. He's quite celebrated and frightfully clever.
Then perhaps he'll find out that James Bentley didn't do it after all. I hope he does.
What makes you say that?
Because I never believed he could have done a thing like that.
Did you know him?
No, not really. My dog got his foot caught in a trap once and he got him free.
What was he like?
He was dreadfully lonely. His mother had just died and he was very fond of her.
And are you very fond of yours?
Yes, I am. That's what helped me to understand what he felt. Mother and I, well, we've just got one another, you see.
I thought somebody told me you had a stepfather.
Oh, yes, I've got a stepfather, all right.
But of course it's not the same thing as one's own father.
My father died before I was born, and Mother married Mr. Weatherby when I was 4 years old. I've never liked him. He doesn't show my mother the least sympathy or understanding. But I don't know why I'm telling you all this. I must go. The German girl we've got is absolutely hopeless. I'm sure she won't have given Mother her lunch.
Bye. Well, at least that's one person I can cross off my list. Not Deirdre Henderson.
More apples, Ariadne. I've never known anyone with such a passion for apples.
I need them to keep body and soul together.
This is Eve Carpenter, Ariadne. Her husband is going to be our next MP. The present one is quite gaga, poor old man.
Robin, you mustn't invent such terrible lies. I'm so glad to meet you, Mrs. Oliver. I was hoping you could come round for drinks this evening.
Well,
it's a special party for you, Ariadne. You know, meet the Queen of Crime.
We're all so terribly thrilled to have you here. Can't you make Broadhinny the scene of your next murder mystery?
Who shall we have as the victim?
Who is your present charwoman?
Oh, no, we don't want anything like that. I think Eve would make a much better corpse, strangled with her own nylon stockings.
I think it would be better if you were to be murdered, Robin, the famous playwright stabbed to death in his country cottage.
But who would the murderer be? What about the madre, using her wheeled chair so there wouldn't be any footprints?
But she'd never want to harm you, Robin.
No, perhaps you're right. As a matter of fact, I was thinking of her strangling you. She wouldn't mind doing that.
But I want you to be the victim. And I've got the perfect murderer. Deirdre Henderson, the plain, repressed girl who nobody notices.
Well, there you are, Ariadne. The whole plot of your next novel presented to you on a plate.
Do you think you could persuade your friend, Mr. Poirot, to come along to my party as well, Mrs. Oliver? You see, I'm a bit worried about inviting him myself, because I was rather rude to him yesterday. I had no idea he was a famous detective.
Oh, I'm sure he'd love to come.
I wouldn't have thought he'd turn down the opportunity to observe the leading lights of Broadhinny letting their hair down. It could be the turning point of his investigation.
The gin flowed freely, and under its influence, an intriguing transformation took place. Mrs. Carpenter became rather arch and flirtatious.
I'm sure you must have thought I was quite frightful, Mr. Poirot. You see, at first I thought you were some kind of salesman. And then I became quite convinced you were going to try and whip up some kind of scandal for the Sunday Comet.
Dr. Rendell glowed with self-satisfaction, and his wife was positively affable.
I do adore your books, Mrs. Oliver. Where do you get all your story ideas from? Does Monsieur Poirot supply you with details of his case histories?
For a while, Mrs. Oliver and I were each the centre of an admiring circle, but we soon ceased to be a novelty. The conversation changed from crime to scandal. Old friends got together to tell one another the intrigues and infidelities of Broadhinny, and Mrs. Oliver and I were left to our own devices.